Community Services Committee meeting, please call to order.
Civic Center.
Present for this meeting is President Karen Holly Nagle, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Tackett, Councilman Powers, Councilman Bell, Councilman Street, Councilman Smalley, Councilman Woods, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Weiner, Councilwoman Diller, my legislative aide is taking the minutes, Nikai Triller, and Councilman Hollins.
Motion approves the Community Services meeting minutes from March 28th.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes from the previous meeting are hereby adopted. We have the first item on this agenda, item number 3, is the vacant housing ordinance. The presentation is going to be conducted by the General Manager of Land Use, I believe. Rich, you're going to do this. As Rich is coming forward, Councilwoman Diller and I have been participating in the Vacant Housing Task Force. I can say that it is a cross-section of county departments. It's Land Use, Community Services, Finance, the Sheriff's Office, Law, so it's across all sections that may have anything to do with helping Newcastle County to address the issue of this vacant properties. And we also have on the agenda the ordinance number 17033, which has been sponsored by Councilman Tackett, and I guess he'll have some input here as well. But Councilwoman Diller has been in attendance at a lot of these meetings, and she may also have some additional information to add here. So at this point, Rich, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rich Hall, General Manager of Land Use, and to demonstrate some silo busting we're doing, if you will. We've been working closely with Community Services, just as Councilman Chairman said here, on this and related housing issues. So what we have before you is a PowerPoint. I'll be brief. I know you've been in this room a long time, and you have a council meeting tonight, so some of us might get faster than others. Can certainly loop back with any of you to provide more information. But what we're going to talk about is the draft ordinance. Again, it's going to be introduced tonight, but also some of the related issues because this is bigger than just the point that the draft ordinance is before you today is about. Draft ordinance is about the vacancy registry, expanding on what was passed in 2015. So we're going to get to that in just one second, but I guess one of the points we want to make is we could have just come to you, draft ordinance, talked about that in isolation and been done. I think it's important to help connect the dots and link this to the broader issues that the county's working on with others, as the chairman mentioned, with the task force. So this is a couple key points I want to highlight. Some of you probably heard these numbers before. We have identified 1,300 vacant properties in the county. The state of Delaware, one statistic throughout there, the state of Delaware is ranked as third in the nation in foreclosures, the rate of foreclosures. But in the case of Newcastle County, we identified 1,300 vacant properties in the unincorporated part of the county. That's not counting what's in the city of Wilmington. So we need a strategy to address this for many, many reasons. I think most of you know that vacant properties have many effects that can be the sign of a downward spiral for a community. And they're not just in distressed communities, or they themselves are a sign of distress, but and this is a national issue, but you can find vacant properties in a number of different types of communities, different incomes. But certainly, once you have a vacant home, it becomes apparent to the community it's vacant. That really can start a downward slide, can help link to. There's a lot of studies that talk about the higher incidence of crime around vacant properties, decreased property value. So suffice it to say, this is an important thing to nip in the bud. And we realized that the draft ordinance, I mean, the ordinance was passed in 15 for a voluntary registry was enough. We needed to enhance our registry and make it that we can add properties to it. What happens is Department of Land Use, Code Enforcement, we become de facto property manager often for these vacant properties, cutting the lawn, trying to keep the roof on these buildings. And so that we incur significant costs from that, and that's yet another reason to address this. And I mentioned this is part of a broader effort. I think the chair covered this issue about the work group. There's a number of participants in this work group. This draft ordinance is one outcome from this work group. There's other things that this work group is working on. And so it's a coordination group, a strategy group, because, again, there are many other issues than just the vacants as part of a bigger picture with dealing with neighborhood health, essentially. A couple of things that have happened already to date. As I mentioned before, the previous registry, Department of Community Services, working with council, had a revamp, created a revamp program, and that's assistance for people to buy vacant properties. Then also the Department of Land Use is targeting certain problem properties for demolition and emergency repairs. We've gotten grants from the state of Delaware, three grants in this case, totaling $1.45 million to help address these issues, blighted properties, remediation, and dealing with abandoned properties. We've also, on the technology ends, and one of the things we're trying to do is better integrate data analysis to decision support and information display, and to just communicate different things are going on out there. So I'll show you a couple screen captures of a computer mapping GIS viewer trying to show where the vacants are and what the clusters of them are. And then I mentioned about the draft ordinance there at the bottom slide to build on the 2015 draft ordinance. This is a map showing the revamp program, where that's occurred. And again, that's a program from out of the community services that helps provide assistance for purchasing previous vacant properties. This is just the URL for the viewer. We're showing this zoomed out. We prefer not to zoom in and show exact addresses where it isn't necessary exactly where these properties are, because they can further target crime. They can upset the community where they reside, because they're sort of demonstrating to everybody there's issues there. I think we have to continue to work with all stakeholders and how we use this data, these data. But in this case, we're zoomed out pretty far. You can see here where the clusters are in the northern part of the county. And this is zooming out even more, a heat map type concept. You can see where the clusters are at this broader scale. So here we are, the vacant premises registration. Again, it's been 2 years for the voluntary registry of vacant properties. And there's only been a few hundred registered, and we know there's 1,300, as I mentioned below. So we've created a draft ordinance, like I said before you tonight, that enables the county to actually place properties to go through the process on this registry and to pay a $1,000 registration fee. This breaks it down. Again, like I said, this enables the department to register properties. If they fail to do it voluntarily for vacant properties, it defines vacant properties. I'll slide about that in just a minute. It requires annual registration fee to be paid, and then over the years it graduates to a higher and higher rate, as you see that schedule of rates there in the middle. And then it also adds provision for adding this to tax lien. So what are vacant? I guess some of this is kind of intuitive, but you have to have obviously a clear process so people don't feel like they go on a long vacation and they come back and they're worried their property, their home's going to be on a vacant property list. So what we're doing is looking at properties that are intended for residential commercial use, but are not occupied, couple things that are not, there's a list there at the bottom that are not considered vacant. They're owned by government. We do some things for the Village of Arden, and they asked that we not enforce this in their community.
They already have one.
Sorry?
They have their own ordinance.
Yes. Model homes and newly constructed home activity for market sale and available for purchase. These are the types of things that are evidence that the premises may be vacant. There's a number of items there from accumulation of mail, a lot of code type things, disconnected utilities, delinquent taxes, absence of vehicles, absence of activity in general. A number of things that code enforcement will go out and try to communicate with the property owner and determine that it is indeed vacant. Items that demonstrate it's clearly occupied, regular mail delivery, utilities, absence of maintenance violation, or a business license for commercial property, and certainly staying up with taxes. I won't get into this now. This is just a schematic that shows the process for when something goes on the registry versus doesn't. So it's an attempt to show you how we have had this laid out and whether or not we put it on the registry or not, and different stages when it would go on or off of the registry. What we're after here is, this is a bit of an example of a full life cycle, if you will, of vacant property, showing you one example. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of examples of these, but showing you a property here from 2009, we tend to try to highlight the most problem properties. So you see it was on the in the top 25 problem property list. County spent $10,000 to repeatedly maintain and secure, maintain the property, purchase it, share sale by Habitat for Humanity. Certainly Community Services worked with them on that. And then it was rehab with home program funding that goes through Department of Community Services. So that's showing a bit of what we like to do more of with vacant properties. In some cases, they do get demolished, but there's a number of parts to this. The registry is just part of it. It'll better enable the county to work through these types of issues, but there's a number of other parts of this puzzle that are important to keep in mind. There are three potential bills. We're working with the AG's office and others in the General Assembly on filling some of the gaps, improving some of the process to deal with these issues. And these bills, as I understand, have not been introduced yet, but folks are working on it. So one is to pre-qualify bidders, to give the county and other local governments the authority to pre-qualify bidders for share of sale. So you're not sort of continuing the problem. You're not selling properties to those that will not improve it. Application of liens, making it easier to apply liens to properties from abatement type activities. And then the other is to give make it easier for code enforcement staff to get in and inspect the properties. So those are ongoing. So a number of things ongoing. There's a number of things that we like to do. There's stuff we've done. There's things that we're working on right now, locally, with the state, and with broader coordination group that was mentioned before, the task force. And then these are some of the things we like to do going forward. Continue the strategy, continue the task force working on a number of these multifaceted projects, but to continue to look at the vacant premises regulations, acquisition strategy, what we're going to do with those properties was to ultimately pay to them, rehabbing them, getting them, working with other partners like Habitat for Humanity, other partners that could receive these properties and help us to fix them up. Continue to work on the share sale, make that work as efficiently as possible. I mentioned other partnerships. Continue to look for other grants. We've been happy to get the grants we have, but this is a big, complex effort. So we're happy that we got those. We want to continue to work with those. And then I mentioned the three bills. We hope they'll be bills in the General Assembly, and certainly that's not all of the other bills that we might wish for later, but we've got three that hopefully will be in play soon. So that's a pretty quick go-through of all that, but I know you all are busy and wanted to put that before you. Again, connect the dots. We got the draft ordinance hopefully introduced tonight, but there's many other parts going on.
Thank you, Rich. I'm sure you have questions. Councilman Tackett. I want to recognize Councilwoman Kilpatrick has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, this process has been ongoing for, I don't know if it's been quite 2 years, but at least a year and a half. And continuously, I would call up, you know, George Haggerty, who was an acting general manager, and ask him where the vacant property legislation is. And periodically, he would say, well, we're working on it. And then all of a sudden, he would say, well, we're actually looking at something new now. And I think this is hence where you came into play with community services and, I guess, then the previous, you know, GM, and then now with Marcus being influential now as we get to this stage. But, you know, when I introduced the legislation in 15 and ultimately we passed it, we had a, you know, press release out in Hokesson for it, and we were very hopeful at that time that the legislation would do what we wanted it to do. But obviously it didn't, so hence we had to arrive at this point. You know, this county is just proliferated with these abandoned and vacant properties. And GM Haggerty at that point, acting, sent me an article that I found very interesting. It was called, these parcels were actually deemed zombie parcels. Yeah. And what happens was, is the bank was coming in and they were the people were in it and they were saying, well, we're going to go to sheriff's sale, you need to get out. Well, the people would hence move out, but then the bank would cancel the sheriff's sale and never take it to sheriff's sale because they didn't want too much on their assets, you know, their books, right, that they would have to disclose to their shareholders. So therefore, the previous owners were responsible for it because they had just walked away. The bank never took it, so it was sitting there in a state of disarray that basically hurled it into the lap of land use, you know, for you all to step up and do something with. And there was a phenomenon sweeping the county several years ago, and I'm really glad it never took hold, but it actually happened in my community where individuals would go around and they would identify a vacant house, and they would move, or they would come in and have a big party and then leave it the next day. Well, the individuals that did that in my neighborhood, they were actually kind of savvy if you think about it somewhat, but they came in, they went around, they introduced themselves to the neighbors, they said they were going to be moving in, everything, you know. Well, what they did was is they moved in, but they had this huge party, and they advertised it on social media, it grew out of control. We probably wouldn't have ever really realized it, you know, what was going on, but, you know, it got so large and somebody got shot, you know, the police were called. It got, you know, it really got bad. It escalated big time. And I believe, and I guess our attorneys are here, they could tell me, it's my understanding that actually when a house does go to sheriff's sale on the bank, there's no time limit where the bank actually has to put it into their name. See, that's...
I think that's just two questions.
We're making eyes.
I didn't call you out. I don't want to interrupt for
2 minutes.
They have
one question.
Yeah.
Mary Jacobson, Office of Law. There's really two questions. One is when the bank starts a foreclosure process, are they required to follow through with that foreclosure process? And there's definitely a... They control the process and they can move the process forward. So that's one question. Is paperwork can be filed? The property owner could be alerted that foreclosure proceedings have started. That, in turn, may motivate occupants to leave, leaving the property vacant. And then the bank just doesn't carry through with the actual foreclosure action. The second issue is, once the property is transferred and the action is, the Superior Court action is completed and the sheriff issues a deed, there's no requirement where a deed, a sheriff's deed, has to be recorded. So when the department is left with tracking down ownership, you know, and sheriff's sale bids can be assigned. So we get in a bit of a quandary when we're trying to figure out if there are property maintenance issues. Who do we notice and how do we notice those people? So we've been working with the sheriff's office on trying to close some of these loopholes, maybe perhaps finding a way to require the sheriff to record a deed and then the recorder deeds forward it to the new property owner. So we're looking at all these. That's probably in the next step. This is our initial step to kind of really address issues that are right before us that we could easily that we could easily identify and hopefully will result in immediate improvements. The one issue with pre-qualifying bidders at sheriff sale, our goal is to attach these liens and bring properties to sheriff's sale. That's one of the cleanest courses of action we have to clear out vacant and abandoned properties. If we bring these properties to sheriff's sale and we see the same types of bidders buying the houses that are just buying them to sit on them and not to invest in their improvements and get back on the market, then we're really just perpetuating vacancy. So these ones that we're focusing on are really in place to say, we're gonna step up our administrative enforcement action. We understand that liens can be moved to the property, assessed against the property. We're going to bring these to sheriff's sale, and then we're going to have actions in place at the sheriff's sale to make sure they're turned over or transferred to somebody who's actually going to put them back into beneficial use.
And Mr. Chairman, too, I strongly believe we're doing some research with George Haggerty and all in land use that, you know, obviously we've looked a couple with community services, you know, and their ability and the dollars that they have over there, but it's so small and limited, it's really not going to be able to do a whole lot when we try to get our arms. And I think we're going to have to come out there and come up with something like land banking, where we partner with some kind of an entity or organization where perhaps they come in, they actually step up to buy this house in the sheriff's sale, or we buy in the sheriff's sale, but we turn it over to them, they come in, they rehab it, they get it back on the market, they sell it, and then we split the profits. And that's not nothing new, and we're not reinventing the wheel. That's been done nationally, and it's been very successful.
Yeah, just let me say this. Acting General Manager George Haggerty, when we first met, talked about this whole issue of zombie, and we recognized that the problem was far greater than just that. So in our previous meetings going forward, we've, as I mentioned earlier, and as was shown here, there are folks from all over the county. MJ is sitting in on all these meetings, the Sheriff's Office, so it's a comprehensive approach to a very challenging problem. But I think a lot of the questions and concerns that council members have here, you're going to realize that it's so many things that, because there's so many different people on this task force from different walks of government, these things are being addressed in a much broader sense. And even the city of Wilmington now has the land bank legislation, so that's an idea that has been brought up as well. Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Powers, and Councilman Smalley.
Thank you. And I apologize because I was a few minutes late, but at one point I know we were talking about taking the 10 most egregious properties in the every year and trying to get them moved over to sheriff sale. Did you mention that, or are we still doing that? Or
we do have a problem property list. It's the top 25, top 10. One of the efforts, as you know, that's beyond the draft ordinance, but to the chairman's point, the broader strategy, one part of that broader strategy is to make sheriff's sale more efficient for us. So I mentioned, I think you caught this part, is some state legislation help with that, the things we do locally. So the draft ordinance is a small piece to this much bigger, broader picture, and certainly making sheriff's sale work better for us is a part of it.
And when I go to community meetings, because most of the communities have some house or houses within their developments that that are vacant, there's always a realtor that's there because they live in the community, and their question continually is, why can't we find out which properties are vacant? Why doesn't the county have some sort of list so that we can market these? Because they said, you know, we've got people looking for this kind of house, and they drive through neighborhoods trying to identify houses that are vacant. So I think that, I mean, it's a very convoluted process, I know, but there has to be some way that we can somehow share this with realtors so that they can help us market these.
If I may.
I
agree with you. I think as we, this program matures a little bit, and we've worked with a number of stakeholders who are used to this data, we're not sort of just throwing it all out there without sort of communicating the broader strategy we have. I totally agree with you. Other jurisdictions in the country that have elaborate, well-working vacants to value type programs, they do work with the development community, the realtors, to market their vacant properties, but they also have behind that the process to get properties free and clear. So in other words, it'd be one thing to share the data that we have internally now and build all this expectation and then get stuck with some of the hurdles we know already have. But I totally agree with you, that's a goal then, and we should have them obviously part of the solution.
Thank you.
Powers, Smalley, Cartier, and Karen Hartley Nagel.
You can line me out.
Line you out?
I might be on the same page as he. There's one player that I haven't heard from anyone that's involved is the banks. Because what Councilman Tackett said, and we've had this problem with Councilman Bell and Smalley, is the banks threaten these people to get out. Code enforcement comes in and starts cutting the grass, attaching it to the person that still owns the house. Mm-hmm. Anybody that has been told should wait till sheriff's sale tells them to get out.
Exactly.
And maintain their house to that point. Where these people don't, whatever little bit of money they can get is going to the county or the bank that's buying it back again. And I'm probably saying that it's happening, yes, everywhere.
And this is bull crap. The banks got to be involved in it. They're the problem. They're totally the problem. And you're not talking to them.
There are communications with the banks. I don't know if...
Bank of America had a hell of a lot of them in my district.
I don't know if Jim or Joe or my staff want to touch on that.
The big ones aren't the problem.
Joe Day, Land Use Administrator for Code Enforcement. So on the vacant properties, when we send out violations, we send out hearing notices, all of our notices go to the banks, they go to the mortgage processing company, and any service company that we have identified through the mortgage electronic recording system. So we do try to notify as many of the stakeholders as possible. I'm not saying we get a lot of reaction from them, but we do send the notices to the banks.
But is that, is that a third-party person that's involved in this? You know, that you're saying is going through, because I'll tell you, you know, I've gotten calls. You know, I did what they were told me to do. I got out of the house, and now I'm getting nothing out of it. In fact, it's a joke.
But the banks are a challenge. I know at one point we did have a designated person in land use specifically dealing with the banks. I'm not so certain what the process is now, but we're not overlooking the banks. It's just real challenging.
Well, it's a problem. It's a major problem.
And frankly, there's really three banks that have the majority of the properties. We do get a lot of communication back from Wells Fargo. The other two banks, we don't seem to get much communication back. But we do still have one person working with the banks and trying to get our communications through, trying to get some reaction from them.
Councilmember Cartier.
Thank you. Just to shift the discussion a little bit, and believe me, I am fully in accord with trying to do more to address vacant properties in the county. So what about commercial properties? Because I've got some of the poster childs for the giant vacant commercial buildings. So what will this enable us to do anything with them? I was like an answer.
Well, the registry is for residential and commercial. I don't know if Joe again wants to elaborate on
specific question is, so you got a shopping mall with a giant vacant building in it. So who has to register it? Who gets the notice, you know, you got a vacant property and you didn't volunteer to do it, here's your fine or whatever.
Well, the draft ordinance, just like with the other properties, would enable the county to put that on the registry.
It's in a shopping mall. Who do you go after? The mall management? The bankrupt corporation? I mean, who do you go after?
Well, as with a lot of these vacant properties, you know, zeroing in on who owns it, together or individually, is part of the challenge. And so obviously a mall might be a little more complicated than an individual home, but it's, you know, the concept's same. You got to research who owns it.
Okay. I think we both have comments. Department of Land Use. So it's not just the registry part. So that particular mall, which I think you're probably talking about on Amos Road, we do know the mall management. So the registry is to help us identify properties that are going to warrant our attention, to get us geared up to try to move them, become redeveloped or repurposed. That particular property, we are actively communicating, and you've been in some of those meetings with the management, the out-of-state management owners, and the in-state management. So we still have regular code enforcement powers available to us that we don't necessarily need that ordinance for. So in that case, those two vacant structures that are on that property for which we already know the owners, we could get very aggressive on. And there have been a number of reasons why we haven't. The former general manager and CAO traveled all the way to New York to talk to the owners. And it's been a long process as they talk about how to redevelop that. We've brought up the property manager from the south for their bigger plans. And that'll be pulled into the whole North Claymont redevelopment plan. But we should lose sight that this ordinance allows us to identify properties that have vacancies, and it does apply to all of them, but when we know the individual owners, that, that it doesn't prevent us from using our aggressive code enforcement powers to go after them.
President Hartley-Nagel?
Yes, I'm in agreement with Councilman Powers, you know, about the banks, so I won't say that again. But what I wanted to find out is, I had recently a vacant property across from me. It went to sheriff's sale, and now there's someone in there. But you were saying that all these are kept secret for now. You know, that's a double-edged sword. How do we, and I'm sure you have good reason for that, and I'd like to hear more, but does it not make sense to make sure that we are letting people know so that they can come in, individuals can come in and buy them, you know, so that we can make sure that we have less vacant properties by make it easier for people to purchase them.
Right.
So how, what is, I'd like to talk about the balance of that, and also if I can arrange something where we see, I can see where some of the vacant properties are, if you can't share addresses where I can go on my own, but, and see what ones you're talking about.
Sure.
You know, there's 1,300 throughout the county, but, you know, so what is the state of disrepair? What can we do more to make sure that they're not eyesores like in a neighborhood or a street like I, myself? The houses are well kept, but there was one vacant property for years.
Sure. So a couple things. One, we're not keeping any data secret. You know, data can exist on a spreadsheet, or you can put it, drill down to the property level, right at internet so everyone can find it, but it's still data, right? So what we're trying to do is not keep it secret, but try to, at this stage, not go out of our way to push out in extreme detail exactly where all the vacant properties are. However, I believe the council was given a link to a property viewer so you can see them. And as I mentioned, I believe a question to Councilman Kilpatrick, what we like to do is sort of in concert with the bigger strategy we have, working across the vacant properties work group, task force, as well with the general public, generally, is to make that that information more available as the overall county program is in better footing to deal with that information being out there. Because obviously, if we put it out there in an extremely visible way, that advertises people these properties are vacant. So just as Councilman Tackett mentioned, people could go and try to take advantage of that. Also, it can be alarming to the communities where there are clusters of these, because it just can be seen to draw down perception of the community. As we get a better overall system, and we're building up a small piece tonight, hopefully, but as we get a better overall system to move those properties forward, then it makes more sense to really push that data out there. So I'm not keeping any data secret. We're just not going out of our way to push it out there right now, because it'll be hard for people to make use of it at this stage because we don't have a full program yet.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that there was considerable discussion around making the list available or publicizing it. And the consensus within the group is that what Rich is explaining is that once you do that, there is some inherent dangers. Going back to what Councilman Tackett was saying, is that some folk are looking for vacant properties for the wrong reasons. So once we publicize that, I mean, those people will probably take more advantage of it than someone who really wants to repurpose it for the right reasons. So we have to balance that and see what the value is. But I kind of agree with Rich that until we have our process in place to really move this into a positive direction, then we have to be a little bit guarded now because we're just getting started. A lot of people know where these vacant properties are anyway for the wrong reasons. I mean, they're the ones who really know where they are. There's evidence of that already. Councilman Smiley.
Very quickly, I'll just say, I was one of the ones that was raising the issue about publicizing and putting them out there because, you know, I didn't want someone to be able to go online to find the list, because even with that list, I got enough problems with the plumbing and hot water heaters and everything else walking out of the vacant houses in my district. I mean, you know, I've had various people caught walking down the sidewalk with their backpack where someone's called in, they saw them coming out of the house, and they find the little 18-inch pieces of copper tubing where they went in there and took all the freaking plumbing out and everything else. Now, I went into one that was a $500,000 house. How they got the jacuzzi out of the second floor, I have no idea. But they took the jacuzzi, the hot water heater, the power panel, all of the lighting, and that one wasn't, and from the outside you would have never known it was vacant. The grass was manicured, everything else. It was a $500,000 house the last time it had sold. I don't know how it ended up in the 7th District either, but So, yeah, there is a definite downfall to making them available to the public.
Councilman Street.
I'm concerned in the big scheme of things about putting in procedural safeguards to see to it that we just don't displace people, that we don't turn around and try to change neighborhoods by running folks out and let developers and speculators come in. And you mentioned the land bank and the land bank legislation in the city. You know, that there are those, and I think meritoriously, who argue that it's for the sole purpose of benefiting developers, and that consistent with the Baker administration's intentional effort to run low-income people out of the city, as they went through and they tore down four square blocks of public housing in Riverside, tore down comparable amount of houses in South Bridge and never replaced it with anything. Those are the things I'm concerned about. Second, the standard of one of the ways of determining whether or not the property is vacant or not is whether or not the utilities were on. Well, we had a fire in my council district where people were living there. There's no electric because they couldn't pay the bill. Sometimes people have their water shut off, they still have to stay there because they have nowhere else to go until they can pay the bill. So just in terms of what's right and what's fair and building in the big scheme of things a procedural safeguard to eliminate, to the extent practical, displacement, to eliminate, to the extent practical, foreclosure, because high foreclosure rate in the city and out of the city is in my council district. And I don't know what the number of vacant properties it is in my district, but my speculation would be that it's among the top. So I'm concerned about vacant properties, support the intention and the effort here, and also concerned about all the things I just said.
And I would agree with you, Councilman Street. I think that the primary focus here is vacancy. It's not driven to take for the county to take someone to sheriff's sale who's in occupied premise. I think that's been our history, not compared to the city where they'll take you to sheriff's sale if you have a $200
water bill.
Exactly. We went through that. But I think that when we talk about all these other initiatives that are out there, these tools to address this vacancy issue, the land banking issue is just one of those, and before we adopt that, I think that council is going to have to really make that decision and see how we go with that. I think our preference is to do what we continue to do now, is to do infill development as we're doing in a lot of areas. I think the revamp program that we instituted just last summer, we've actually used all of those dollars in certain areas around the county. Those dollars went very, very quickly. So I think that's our preferred approach. I don't think that we would have a concentration of vacancies, say like most urban areas have, where we can employ the kind of land bank that, say, the city does or any other large urban area. I think ours are more scattered around. When we look at the map and you see where these vacancies are, they're pretty much, they're in some of the highest ranking, highest income districts in Newcastle County, and they're in some of the lowest. But I think there's no just certain area where they are, where we would just target to say that. That's my opinion, that we would just go in and say we're going to take over this street or that block. I just don't see that happening, but that'd be a discussion for us to have, certainly. And I'm with you on that.
You agreeing with me?
Yes. If
I'm looking at
it. It's allowable.
You need to leave the room. I got to listen to something. I got to listen to the tape. Find out what happened.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Isn't some of the issue on this, some of the federal banking laws? I mean, the banks have no pressure put on them to take these to sale. And that I see, you know, one banker said, well, if we sit on it, the market will go up. Well, no, it won't, because your house is deteriorating, so it's never going to make any more money, whether the market goes up or not. But, you know, there's just so much of this between the feds and the state that we have no control over, that we can only try to find the niches that we, the little ones, that we can control.
And that's what we're trying to do. That's why we have the lawyers in the room when we're having these meetings. We have the sheriff's office in the room. There's certain things that we want the sheriff's office to change to do. Some of those things they don't necessarily want to do, so we're pushing that as well. So it's everybody's hands-on when we have these meetings. But these issues are not as simple as we would like for them right. to be. There are certain legal things by the feds, yes. with the banks and so forth, that, you know, ties our hands to a great extent. Councilman Smiley.
I just want to comment. At least I'm seeing my district, of course, I pretty much have a handle on quite a few of the vacant properties to keep an eye out. As much as I find the proliferation of "we buy houses" signs very annoying on the poles and everything else, and
yeah.
actually had an accumulation of over 100 in my office a couple of years ago, that seems to be the entity, at least in the 7th District, that is actually creating the turnaround. I mean, they're picking up these houses, and in a couple of months they're rehabbing the entire house. And I've got two in my neighborhood that were recently done by different groups, because I stopped talking to them, find out what's going on. They didn't even make it to a real estate sign. People were talking to them, and when they finished and put the new lock on the front door, people were moving in. They followed through, bought. They even told me, if somebody stops by, they're letting them pick things to put in the house as long as they buy, you know, sign the service. So that's actually that group, or multiple groups, whether we buy houses and we pay cash, that's where the turnaround is. It's not the banks working with anybody or anything else, because a large part of them, mine, have to do with someone died, the family doesn't want the
Abandoned.
House. People just moved away and moved. They got places in Florida. They're ready to retire. They didn't want to deal with the market. They just walked away. Not so much the evictions, but this, we buy houses and the cash form. That's who's doing the revitalization in the 7th District. Because I look out my front door, I can see 5 vacant properties. Now I'm down to 3, just out my front door. There would be another one, but I can't afford to let Dwight move. I need her.
We're going to invite them to the next meeting. We are encroaching on the time of the executive committee meeting. If we can kind of, I know there are other questions council members may have. I didn't get a chance to get to the public yet, so that we can move to executive committee meeting. Any additional comment or question from members of council?
You skipping Marina?
No, I'm going to get to that. I just want to get this part over with. okay, is there any comment or question from the members of the public on this particular issue of vacant houses? Seeing none, we'll move on to the Route 9 Library update. General Manager.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I just have some brief updates. I know we had a capital budget hearing over a month ago. And
introduce yourself, please, sir.
Again, I'm sorry. Marcus Henry, General Manager of the Newcastle County Department of Community Services. Thank you. There was a question, I think, at the capital budget hearing with respect to what's happening with the Southern Library in terms of timing. As you're aware, some of the state funding that had been obligated over the years for the Southern Library had been deobligated to support the completion of the Route 9 Library. But in consideration of that, we're working with the state to commission a new needs assessment that'll help to identify potential sites in the southern quadrant of Newcastle County for potential Tier 3 library, which would be a 25,000 foot square library with the opportunity to expand to 40,000 feet like the Route 9 Library. We're in that process now in terms of the needs assessment. There's a public engagement piece that's going to happen. We'll brief council as we move forward. I'll obviously work with Councilman Bell and Councilman Powers on that. I just want to make that clear. I don't know if I did that at the hearing last month. That's kind of what's happened with Southern. I can answer any questions related to that.
Councilman Bell?
As John Kennedy once said, let us begin.
Let us begin.
And I would certainly, and I think my counterpart in Southern Newcastle County would also agree that this needs to get off the ground now and not wait till 2019. We've waited long enough. We've given concessions to work with folks in other areas of the county. We have some properties that have been offered. There were studies done before, needs assessment. So I think that we could probably fast track this a little bit, but we either do it or Pac-Man will get it.
Just to be clear, too, some of those sites that have been looked at over the years are still available. We'll work with them. We'll obviously work potentially.
We look forward to working with them.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Councilman Powers?
I think if you're looking at the needs, especially when they do the library districts by the school district, that there's a need in the Smyrna Library because half the landmass for the school district is in Newcastle County, a third of the students. And I keep hearing this thing that it's not in the county, but there should be, even the state is saying supporting that law. But I know, talking to the administration, he has said that he can't see putting it now. When they first came to me, I said it'd be a lot easier if they built it.
We're talking about Duck Creek, right?
Yeah. It's part of my district. In the town in Newcastle County, and it's the same thing as the library in Middletown, is the people that can use, the people that need you, and both these libraries are exactly the same. The kids that need to use those computers can walk to that. To build the library in Middletown at Parkside, $1 million homes, every kid in that development has a computer. But where it is right now off of Lake Street and the townhouses, I can bring the principal from Silver Lake, say, there's kids, that's how they're doing their homework, is in that library. And the same thing needs to be done in Smyrna. But there are some kids, they don't go north, they go that way. Why are we not supporting that library? And there's, if you're looking at the needs, that's part of the needs of Southern Newcastle.
I can appreciate that. I mean, one of the things you're looking at is wherever the site goes, the pros and cons in terms of accessibility and proximity to services in and around there. So that's a very important characteristic we're looking at. Thank you.
Additional comments, questions from members of council? Councilman Street?
It was my understanding, maybe I'm in error, that part of what we're going to be talking about today was an update with continuation, continuity, and applications for our grants for the Route 9 library.
You mean the state aid that we have pending for the
bunker? Can you identify yourself, please?
Diana Brack.
Okay. Specifically, this little piece of paper says, response to council questions April 3rd, 2017. Councilman Street, where are we with continuing to find funding for alternate sources for the funding foundations, grants, M&T writers program, and operate the library? General Manager Marcus Henry will address this operating budget inquiry to 25th Community Services Council Committee.
Well, I can speak to that certainly. One of the things we're doing is, let me finish with the Route 9 library in itself with construction completion. We remain on schedule. It's due to the construction completion to be done August 1st. And then there's going to be about 6 weeks in terms of staff deployment, furniture, computers, books, and such. And we're projecting still to open September 12th of this year. With respect to the rest of the campus, we're actively engaging potential development partners in terms of senior housing, the potential for a bank, and also a medical center to share that campus in the future, and we're negotiating those, and as I get more details, I'm happy to brief council on that.
Thank you.
That's about as non-responsive as you can be. There was money raised, sent to PAL as a friend of the library, Longwood, Welfare, Crystal, those foundations, M&T programmatically, and it was my understanding there was going to be an effort made to try to continue support from local foundations, and it was a concern about, because of the size of the library, that it was concerned about operating money, and that there would be effort made to try to obtain money programmatically from some of the local foundations and continue funding from particularly M&T for the writing program. Yeah. Okay, nobody's aware of it, so obviously the answer is it's not going to continue. While you're here, so you can not answer the question the next time. My understanding that in the traveling that was done in preparation for building the library, that the cafeteria and the effort to have that program developed and have food served on site came primarily out of the Philadelphia Library. And a couple council members raised questions as to whether or not that was cost efficient and whether or not it could be self-supporting, and were told that based upon the success of the operation in the Philadelphia Library, that we'd be able to do that. Now it's my understanding that due to cost, that aspect of activity in the Philadelphia Library has been stopped. So my question is, are we still going forward with that? And if we are, what are we going to do not to be put in a comparable situation?
Not to give you a non-answer, but we're working out the program with respect to the kitchen and the operation of the kitchen when we open up. But I think a lot of what you're referring to, unfortunately, Councilman, is from the previous administration, from the previous general manager, and I wasn't privy to some of those discussions you're referring to. I'm happy to talk with staff and others to get some answer to these things, but I wasn't part of those discussions.
I would suggest that. Go ahead.
Okay, realistically, I raised a question a month ago. All right. And regardless of whose watch it is, whether or not these things are going to go forward or not go forward, I think are at least worthy of an answer.
Well, I would agree that an answer should be given, and I think that I would suggest that if there are other partners, if I'm understanding Councilman Street correctly, that have made some sort of commitment, we need to have an update on that. If they are, in fact, holding to that commitment, or we had commitments that are not confirmed, just where are we with the partners? I know from the very beginning there was an awful lot of people involved.
There were a lot of discussions. I'm happy to give an update
right,
in terms of where they are.
The Moors, et cetera, and folk who have fallen off. So that would be a good update to say, well, who's really with us at this point? Who's going to actually be a partner as we come to the completion of this library for the stage? Councilman Street.
Respectfully, if it isn't in process now and the new administration's been in 4 years and they don't have a commitment, and nobody's followed through with those foundations, nobody's followed through with that bank, it's not going to happen.
And it may not. You still deserve an answer.
Well, I think for the mere fact that we change administrations, to let that kind of support that had the potential of not only helping the Route 9 library, but the other libraries and libraries to be built, I think it's a shame and a disgrace not to have followed through with that. I mean, we were at the tune of where outside support had got to the level of $1 million. And, you know, it was my hope and expectation that kind of support, that level of support would continue to grow and thrive. So I'm disappointed at best.
Even with the new administration, I think we should be able to determine, you know, if we have commitments, what are those commitments, when were those commitments entered, and what's the value of those commitments. We still should be able to find that out. Did we have a commitment from M&T or whomever, or we didn't have a commitment?
Understood.
So, Councilman Cartier.
Councilman Street, just to reflect on the process that I recall going on with Claymont's library, there was a friends group as a nonprofit entity that wrote, in fact, those grants. And they were able to secure grants from Welfare, Crystal Trust. So, I mean, if there was an entity writing the grants, they would have been funded, I'm sure.
Well, we received funding. Okay. There was not a friends group. When the friends group of the Garfield Pratt was asked to be a part of writing the grants, they told us being the county, that they were in the middle of strategic planning, couldn't do it. So the administration at that time went to the Powell Center, asked them to be the friends, and so the application was submitted from Powell for the library, both for capital and for program, I'm not sure about programming. The Young Writers Program was funded by M&T. But it was my understanding at the time that there would be efforts made to provide some continuity of funding from those sources. And certainly, you know, I've had discussions with some council members. We are going to do a Friends of the Route 9 Library. And I'm going to ask some folks sitting around this table to be part of that. And when we go, whoever replaces us, to be included in that. And I have, you know, since Pastor Bullock has his church right across the street from the library, he's going to be asked to be a part of it. So we're going to do that. I'm just disappointed that there's been no follow-up with those resources to take. But obviously, I'll do what I need to do to make that happen.
Councilman Bell?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I have to weigh in on this. I mean, you know, we've all worked together in support of the Route 9 Library, and I can't believe for one minute that just because an administration changes, that our path forward, our commitments, our knowledge base of where we were and where we're going isn't there. And I look forward to the report, because if we're going to start anew on every single project and every single endeavor that this council has supported through the years, not just last year, the last 4 years, but through the years, then we're going backwards. We're digressing. So I would encourage folks to reach out, get the information, and come forward with it. But there's got to be some continuity in our path forward. You just can't drop things and start from day one and say none of this was there. I'm equally frustrated, and I support Councilman Street on this, and we've all supported this library. I think we need some direction as to where we're going with this, and what was there, and what we committed to, and where are we going.
And I agree. I think that's what I'm asking for, is that if there were commitments, can we confirm those commitments?
I will do that, sir.
And I also know that oftentimes when we're in pursuit of commitments that are never really confirmed, I know we tried to make that the downtown district, and we got presentations and so forth, and the state, in its infinite wisdom, decided that they selected Wilmington for the downtown development grant. So if there have been confirmations, or if there have been even suggestions that there was going to be support, then that's what we need to have. We certainly can't start from scratch.
We're not starting from scratch, yeah. Sir, but I'll present where we yeah. are and what was... I'll do the research and tell you where we are. Yeah. I feel very confident in that.
That would be appreciated. Okay. Any further comment or question? Seeing none, any comment? Okay.
Kathy Jennings, Chief Administrative Officer. I would just like to take a second to let you know some of the initiatives that we've been making. I can't say that we have solid grant commitments at this time, but we haven't been sitting around doing nothing, and Marcus Henry has been quite busy. Frankly, this has been a project that Councilman Street, I know, you have worked incredibly hard, and all of council has their hearts into. It's unlike any other library that the county has ever opened, because it is an innovation center. It has to be a community center, a center that I know you've worked hard to make sure that everyone in the Route 9 corridor feels welcome to come to, wants to come to. So step one, and I know there have been community surveys in the past done, but we need to come back and talk to everybody again, because the library has to be what that community wants it to be. Councilman Street, what you want it to be. And so we've started those discussions again. We need to involve council, no doubt about it. We know that a lot of the issues that are taking place, a lot of the community's needs, are in some workforce training. We've met with Mark Brainerd at Bell Tech, who has committed to helping us in the area of innovation in terms of workforce training. We have met most recently with Christiana Care, because the health needs of that community are incredibly important, and there is no real medical care within walking distance in that community. And so we've met with them with discussions as simple as programming at the library free of charge by Christiana Care, in the areas of health outreach that are needed and that are specific to the community. A lot of it may be prenatal education. Some of it is in training for new fathers. They also have health outreach workers who are willing to partner with us to work out of the library, to actually go into the community and address health needs of the community. So we're in those discussions. And we've met with the Colonial School District Superintendent, Dusty Blakely. We continue to meet with him, I believe, on a couple of occasions, to talk about making sure that whatever programming is available at the library is specific to the curriculum in the surrounding school district, so that we can really mentor the kids in a way that fosters their education, that we're not just throwing programs at them. So we all need to work together. We recognize that. We've been in pretty intensive internal discussions as well, and we want to make sure that the community is involved. We want to make sure that council is involved.
Councilman Street?
Just so you know, there were extensive discussions with AI about providing health care. AI had made a commitment, and then for whatever reason, they pulled out. But I was concerned, as I am now, that to put a lot of medical presence and those programs and services right at the library site, I was concerned that there was a possibility that the health care function would overshadow the library, and then part of the purpose would be defeated. So I'd like to see both. Second, I'm concerned that because of the Bookitarium, because of the Scriptorium, because of the Century Room, folks from all over the county are going to want to use that library. So, you know, it's going to be inclusive. It's built with public tax dollars, but it should be a welcome area for everybody to enjoy and reap the benefits of. So I'm concerned, as you are, about the clear absence of appropriate health care coverage there, but I'm not so sure the library itself should be the site for that. And third, fourth, I like Dr. Blakey. If I compare his administration to at least one of the former superintendents that we had great difficulty with, you know, it's a great new beginning. But if you look at the performance scores of my children and the children in that area, particularly at Eisenberg and McCullough, they're just as disastrous as the so-called priority schools within the city of Wilmington. And so Colonial has made great strides and great steps in improvement, but quite frankly, if you look into Colonial to be the leader in providing educational services to those kids there, I think that's an error in judgment. And I think we should look at ways that we can provide some additional leadership and provide enhancement services. And I'm not so sure it's a good idea for the school district that hasn't fared well to be the sole leader in that endeavor.
Can I quickly stop?
Okay, and then we're going to have to, my aide has to leave at 5 o'clock, and then we have another meeting. So if we can wrap this up and put it on our next community services agenda, if it's okay with you, Councilwoman Diller,
sure.
To continue this discussion. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Councilman Street, I couldn't agree more. We are not looking to Colonial to provide the educational services, but we need to make sure that the curriculum that the children have in the surrounding schools, we can appropriately help those children with homework, with mentoring, with volunteers, so that we're not just throwing education at them without specific curriculum tie programming. And so I think we're in complete agreement, and I really look forward to speaking with you about that.
Well, just so you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. For 35 years, I've done exactly that at Hilltop. And I've benefited immensely, the agency's benefited immensely from the partnership we have with Red Clay. By the same token, I had to go above and beyond outside entities, work with other institutions to enhance the educational performance of our kids, and 60 to 70% of the active participants at Hilltop are on the honor roll, and I think the outside resources that we use above and beyond Red Clay is a major part of that. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I also know what works and what doesn't work.
Any further comment or question from any member of the council?
I'll just one thing. In my response, I'll make sure it's in writing to all the council so it's clear in terms of what's been asked, okay? It's not going to wait until next community service.
Okay, I appreciate that. And if we may continue this discussion at the next, I would encourage you to do just what you said you're going to do, and then we will continue this discussion at the next.
So you have information when we go into the next meeting.
Yes, I appreciate that.
There's no misunderstanding.
All right. Any comment or questions from members of the public? Seeing none, is there a motion?
No, sure.
Second.